and welcome aboard the battleship Pretension. I'm David Bax. Tyler Smith is on his long-term assignment of getting better. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook. He is able to tweet and post now. You can find out what's going on with him there. We do have someone else here, and we'll get to that in a second. But first, I really got to tell you guys about tweakedaudio.com. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. I use them each and every day of my life. Today, in fact, I was using them to listen to a new album by a death metal band called Outer Heaven. The album is called Infinite Psychic Depths, and I'm calling it right now, it's the best pure death metal album of the year so far. So check out Outer Heaven. It sounded great on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds that are available at a low, low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you go to, if you use the offer code Pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low, low price. So go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code Pretension.
Okay. It's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, we're back. And anyone who remembers what we did 2 weeks ago on the podcast can probably guess what we're doing today. We're going to be wrapping up San Diego Comic-Con 2023. And once again, we're doing it with our friend Ryan Gallagher from the Criterion Cast. Welcome back, Ryan.
Thanks, David. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you. It was good to see you in San Diego a bunch of times. We had dinner and drinks. It was great.
It was great. It was a good Comic-Con. It was definitely felt weird, as we were anticipating. It was definitely different with, you know, all of the canceled panels and everything, but I mean, I obviously miss all of our friends who would come down, and you know,
but that I don't think it's the this year thing. That was already going away.
You're right. It totally was. And
I think what I was going to say was, let's get into it, shall we? just general thoughts. And I was going to say, I predicted it would be a weird year. I would say for me personally, it was less weird than I expected. I think because I have over the past, almost decade, like sort of weaned myself off the big panels anyway, and stuck to smaller panels and outside stuff and activations and friends and stuff like that. And so I kind of just did what I was going to do anyway.
Totally. You're right. I think I'm probably in that same boat too. But it was weird, I guess. It was weird because everyone who wasn't at Comic-Con in my family that was asking me about it was like, oh, is there no one there? Is it dead? Yes. And I was like, no, it's like way more crowded everywhere you go because of all the canceled panels. The floor was insane every single day. It was
twice the whole weekend. That's it.
All of the panels that I wanted to go, maybe not all, but so many of the panels that I wanted to go to were completely full. They had lines wrapping around them. Like I couldn't get into, you know, the Studio Ghibli one was just in like this tiny room, and it was a line wrapped around the upper floors. It was wild.
Yeah, I had one I couldn't get into too. We'll get into it. Well, we'll get into that later. But I guess let's just go chronologically. Wednesday night is preview night at Comic-Con. Did you do anything fun on preview night?
I dragged my kid with me, and we had fun walking around for a little bit and didn't do too much. But you know, it was a fine preview night, I guess. It was like, it wasn't any different than any of the other ones. I very rarely even know what exclusives are going to be there to be excited about. And so I don't
really
end up, I mean, sometimes I do. Sometimes if I follow that company like NECA or Mondo and stuff, and I'll see like, oh, they have a cool thing for preview night. But really, I just kind of wandered around for a couple hours and then we got sick of it and left because it was just, it's just too crowded to walk around the floor.
Yeah, I do make a list of things to buy, and generally in years past I have gotten to all of them. You talked about the show floor being more busy this year. Every time I tried to go to Mondo, it was just too big a line, so I didn't end up buying anything from Mondo, which they had a couple of it saved me almost $100, so I guess that's good. But yeah, they had a couple of on Michael Giacchino records on vinyl. Yep, one they had like his score for the Batman, and they had like his own music, a record of his own music that I really had wanted to pick up both of those, but I couldn't get in, or I just couldn't bear waiting that long. Sure. Especially, I know this is a dumb complaint, and Terrence and I had the same complaint last year, but second year in a row, no carpets in the exhibit hall. It makes standing around in a line weirdly harder. It's harder on your feet, you know. It used to always be carpeted, the whole thing.
I didn't even realize that, but you're right. And it,
yeah, second year in a row.
That's weird.
Yeah, maybe I would have been more willing to stand around and wait for Mondo exclusives on carpet. But
do you think that's like a COVID thing, or is that just like a save money thing?
I think it's probably a little bit of both, or I think maybe it was a COVID thing last year. But also, it was probably a save money thing last year because they lost out on 2 years of revenue.
Yeah.
Or whatever you call it for a nonprofit. And so I guess last year I kind of thought like, okay, they're doing this because of COVID or to save money or both. And I kind of just assumed it would be back this year. And when they announced beforehand that there was going to be no carpet. It's hard. It's a bummer. But I also know, just to be all inclusive, I know for people who use wheelchairs and stuff, it's actually easier.
Yeah.
And some of the big booths have their own carpet, which is fine. I real quick before I went into what I did buy, which none of which is movie related, unfortunately, because I didn't go to Mondo. You mentioned bringing your daughter along, and I'm going to repeat something that I said to you. Like on Friday, I ran into you and your daughter. And like, it's such a cliched thing for grownups like us to be like, oh my God, they've gotten so big. Like, of course, that's what kids do. But like the last time when my wife and I were in Portland in 2018, so 5 years ago was the last time I had seen her. And like, yeah, when I saw you guys like stand up at the Leonard Maltin panel together to leave, and I was like, oh my God, like she's so big. But I'm like, that's so dumb. Like, of course, that's what happens.
No, they are. I mean, it's been fun to see them grow up over the course of the Comic-Con for the past 12 years now. It was cool. Yeah. I mean, for me, this moment was cool because of what it means to me. It was less cool for them, but like I was 12, my first Comic-Con. That was like, so Miranda is now going to Comic-Con at the same age that I was when I first went. So, you know, even though Miranda has gone to Comic-Con every year since they were born, basically. Anyway,
so as far as what I picked up, I didn't go to Mondo. So I got a gift for my nephew. He doesn't listen to the podcast, so I can say what it is. Yesterday's had a limited edition Misfits t-shirt that's like looks like the cover of like an EC Comics like horror thing, so I bought that, and it comes with a little collectible card that says like what number it is. It's like, I think they made like 350 of them, and I got him like number 163 or something like that. So that's cool. I bought, now I can't remember the name of the booth, because there are so many, like, obviously we're talking about big names, you know, like Mondo and stuff like that. But there's also just like a lot of creators who have their own booths, people who create comics and people who create books and all sorts of other stuff. And I went to this one booth, I can't remember the name of it, and I got Natalie a present. It's a very comfortable sweatshirt that says it has the word records and it has a little cartoon of a dog like holding records and like listening to records. It's very Natalie, and she loved it. And the people at the booth were like, oh my God, we like, this was Wednesday night. They were like, oh my God, we thought we brought enough for the whole week, but we might sell out of these tonight. And sure enough, I saw one the next day on somebody else. And then I went, there was another, like an even smaller booth over in like Artist Alley. There was this guy who, cause you know, I refer to myself as an Angeleno now. I know I'm like a St. Louisan in terms of I'm St. Louis born, but this year, 2023 marks the year that I will have lived in Los Angeles longer than I lived in Missouri. So I feel like an Angeleno now. And there's a guy who made a book that was like famous cryptids, but in famous places in Los Angeles. So that's cool. And I got a bumper sticker that is the Mothman saying, don't take the 405, which is very Los Angeles and cool. I'm not really a guy. I like this one. And I also have a newish car, so it'll, and I keep forgetting what it looks like, so it'll help me find my car in the parking lot, the Mothman. So yeah, and that's all I did. And then I had dinner and drinks with our friend Matt Patterson. And that was all. That was my entire Wednesday night. So should we move on to Thursday?
Yeah, let's do it.
So I foolishly thought that Hall H would be easy to get into because of the lack of people, but there's still. I didn't get into the Paramount panel, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles panel. There were like, I thought I'd be able to walk right in. I didn't line up or anything. I just got there and was like, I'll be able to walk right into this. No, there was a line all the way over to the Indigo Ballroom, or all the way over to the Hilton Bayfront for something later. I don't even know what.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the big thing now is like there are video game panels in Hall H and stuff. Like, I think that the video game people aren't on strike, so I think we're there to like see. I know there's a Spider-Man 2 video game.
Yeah, you're right. I did see a lot of people posting about that.
There was a wrap, you know, the buildings are all wrapped up for different things. And a lot of them are usually movies and TV shows more so than movies. But there are also some like video game building wraps. And I definitely saw a Spider-Man, one of those. So that might have been what it was. Anyway, I didn't get in. But that left me time to do other stuff. What did you, we ended up running into each other at a panel that was at 4:30. So what did you do prior to that?
You know, I'm going back through my schedule, and I actually didn't end up in any of the, I kind of just wandered around a little bit before that Talk to Me panel, and then the Chasing Amy one over in the Indigo Ballroom.
All right. Well, we'll get to that in a bit. Because I want to say what I did.
Yeah.
Again, not really movie related stuff, but there wasn't a lot of movie related stuff. The beer brand Voodoo Ranger for the second year in a row turned an old like schooner, which they turn into a pirate ship. They hoist a big like sail and flag that has the Voodoo Ranger logo. They turn it into a bar. Essentially, you have to wait in line to get on, but it's first come first serve. So I waited a little bit, won a free sticker, and. Yeah, got on a boat and had a couple of Voodoo Ranger beers on a boat. And then I walked a long way into the gas lamp to, a network called Cozy TV, I guess they have the rights to Roseanne reruns now, and they're making a big deal out of it. They turned a parking lot into Lanford Days Fair, where like there were all these like, carnival type games, you know, like ring toss and stuff like that. And they all had different, funny names. I'm going to try and see if I can, find the pictures that I took that say what the funny names are. So, Becky's Balloon Pop, Roseanne's Ring Toss. What else? DJ's Dunk Tank, Beverly's Laundry Toss. You throw some laundry in a basket, I guess. But then at the back of that, they had the Lanford Lunchbox, where I sat down and had a free loose meat sandwich. I'm not sure how big a fan of Roseanne, the sitcom, not the person. Nobody's a fan of Roseanne the person anymore. Yeah, so I sat down and had a free loose meat sandwich, and they had a huge recreation of the Roseanne couch that you could take a picture on, but I was like alone, so I'm not gonna like sit on a couch alone and say like, will you take my picture? But then they also had the Lanford Playhouse, where they actually had like a musician, like the singer-songwriter like type musician playing guitar. It was like they went all out for this thing, and like it was so far for, it was like 6th and E, like way up into the gas lamp. I don't even know if that's still considered the gas lamp. And there weren't that many people there because it didn't have a great sort of stumble upon type of factor being that far away. But they went all out and it was cool. Or maybe people were staying away because of the bad association with Roseanne herself, which I totally understand. I would not blame anyone. I mean, even my wife, like, she and I both have loved watching Roseanne reruns in the past, and she's kind of said like, I think I'm done at least for a good while of like watching that, which I understand. But that show has a very dear place in my heart. So those were the things that I did before actually going to a panel on Thursday, where I ran into you at A24's Talk to Me panel.
You know, I guess real quick before we get into that, I did realize what I went to before that. So there were two animation related panels before that A24 one. And one of them was actually awesome. And it was this panel that had Jerry Beck, the animation historian, but also like Don Hahn, who's written like tons of books on animation. Leonard Maltin was there. Jenny LaRue, who's written some other and like art of animation books, and she's a story artist, but also the author Mindy Johnson, who wrote this book Ink and Paint about the women of Disney's animation, like in the early days, and she got to talking about, I've just was looking this up right now because I couldn't remember the name of the animator, but she's writing a book now that's coming out in 2024, and she's in the middle of writing it. So I don't know if this date is going to stick, but it's a book about this woman film director, animation film director, Bessie Mae Kelly, who was around, I think, in like the teens and the 20s. Now I'm going to have to like look her up, but it was fun to hear. So it was the panel talking basically about like the process of writing books about animation history, and just how long it takes to write these things, and how you just stumble upon, you know, someone who is related to the person that you're writing about, and suddenly they like bring out this trove of old drawings or things that have been kind of sitting in the family, you know, in the attic for years, and no one realized that this person, you know, Bessie Mae Kelly, was like basically lost to history until like they started digging around and finding this stuff. And so that was actually a really awesome panel. The one that was like right after it in the same room was about people from San Diego who had gone on to have careers in the animation industry, and so some of them have gone on to work with like Disney, and it was just fun to hear them, you know. It was like all these guys who had basically grown up in San Diego, drew all through high school, and, you know, were like, you know, big nerds, and then went on to actually get jobs in animation. So it was kind of, you know, inspiring, and it was fun to have, you know, a room full of people who presumably all were kind of either had those dreams or were excited, you know, for them. And so it was like, it was kind of a good feel good, heartwarming panel, to start the day with.
Okay. So Talk to Me, there's a new A24 movie that I didn't see at Sundance. We talked about this 2 weeks ago. I don't need to go into that. I don't remember the name of the moderator. It was like Bucky something, I think.
He seemed to know the guys, and they seemed to know him. They seemed like they were all YouTubers, I think.
Okay, that makes sense, because that's where the directors have talked to me, who's Filippo, what's their brothers, I can't remember their last name.
Yeah.
They were there, and the cast was not there, even though... So the cast being entirely Australian, none of them is in SAG, but apparently they decided not to promote the movie during the strike in the US, sort of in solidarity with the striking SAG actors. So it was just the Danny and Michael Philippou.
Although I think like I don't remember if they brought this up during the panel, but A24 has made an arrangement with SAG, yeah. Right? As far as like,
I don't know. Yeah, was that the case then? Had they already made it?
That's a good question. I don't know if that was like a late breaking thing, but I mean, I have seen a lot of people posting, you know, shots of like, oh, A24 has made a deal, and you know, if A24 can do it, like, why can't these other studios?
Yeah, A24 agreed to what the actors wanted, and so there you can work on A24 products projects. I said products. Oh, I'm not referring to movies as product. It's art. Anyway, I thought it was a good a really good panel. We got some good
it was fun to hear them talk. They were really charismatic guys, like, and it was they seemed very excited to be there. They seemed very excited to just be talking about the movie. And I've only know about it, you know, only what I've seen in the trailer, basically. I haven't seen it yet. But it was a fun, like, it got me more excited, definitely, to see it.
They were really entertaining. There was also, their accents are very thick, and like the way that, it's in a big, this is an Indigo Ballroom, which is the third biggest room. It's not like the best acoustics. So, there were times that I'm like, not entirely sure what they're talking about. I'm trying to remember, they said, I'm trying to remember if they told any good stories. They mentioned one that like they had to fight to cast the lead in the movie, which we'll get to later, having seen the movie. That's insane. But there was also a really great story that, again, maybe you understood more of, because I couldn't always catch what they were saying, but like one of them worked on the Babadook or was an intern on the Babadook.
That's a good question, because I was quickly Googling them during the panel, like the Babadook kept coming up, and I wasn't sure exactly what their relationship with that was.
I think one of them was like an internship on the Babadook, and one of his jobs was to pick up Essie Davis, the star of the Babadook, on the way to the set, and he would bring his brother along with him to just hang out on set, and then like the producers were like, hey, you can't bring your brother to set, and also you can't just have your brother in the car when you're picking up the star of the movie. So then he snuck his brother on the set in the back seat of the car, which was like a hatchback. He like hid under like some blankets and hid from Essie Davis too, like Essie Davis is in the car, not knowing the other brother was like hiding in the back seat to sneak onto set. And that was part of their, I guess, learning about film.
They had some good stories about, what they had to cut for the movie, like trimming down some of the like more graphic, intense stuff that wouldn't make it past the censors. And so they were saying like, well, we trimmed it down to like, you know, or because it was too intense for, you know, for as long as it was. And they talked a lot about like, you know, maybe there will be like that. This is like their cut. Like they're happy with the final cut of this movie, but that there were lots of things that they had to trim out that maybe would make it into like, you know, some kind of home video release eventually. Yeah,
they did talk. Well, they talked a lot about working together as brothers, and like there was a funny story about them like not wanting to argue with each other in front of like the cast and crew. So on set, they would like text each other like, "Stop fucking contradicting me." And then in editing, they talked about more than multiple times they would have different ideas about how to cut together a scene, and they would then each make their own cut of a scene and show it to a few like trusted friends in the industry who would inevitably say like, these two are like exactly the same, but they would be like arguing over a matter of like three frames here and there. It was a fun panel. Only to be maybe even outdone by the next panel, which was the Chasing Amy panel. There's a documentary come out, does not yet have distribution. I think it's just playing festivals. It's called Chasing Amy, and it's about the film Chasing Amy and its contentious relationship, or the sort of queer community's contentious relationship with it. But it also is a personal story about one queer person in particular, who discovered the movie while he, so I think he or the when Kevin Smith brought the director out, he said they. Yeah. The director's girlfriend called him he and him.
Yeah, so I think he uses he him pronouns.
Yeah, his name's Sav Rogers, and he as a young queer person living in small town Kansas, like found the movie like incredibly inspirational and did a whole TED talk about it. And then that led to him making this documentary about it with Kevin Smith's cooperation. But I say cooperation, like, I don't want it. Like, sometimes when you see a biopic, like, oh, King Richard, which I didn't like, just picking a somewhat recent one, like, you can tell when, like, oh, the family of the person being like, whose story is being told clearly had approval here. They didn't show us the movie. They just showed a clip from the movie. But based on Kevin Smith as moderator, the way he talked about it, this wasn't something that he was like protective over. It seemed like he really wanted to learn from Sav, yeah, and learn from the community. Definitely. I would say this panel made me really eager to see the movie, and also made me like, because I don't remember the last time I saw Kevin Smith moderate a panel. It's been a long time. Well, that's not true. In person, it's been a long time. He moderated the Bill and Ted Face the Music panel during the Comic-Con at Home 2020, right? That would have been. Yeah. But just seeing him and seeing his humility and his kindness as he talked to these people, Sav, the director, his partner, Riley, and then they also had a critic from The Hollywood Reporter, whose name I am forgetting. Kevin Smith just came off as like a really great, gracious, kind, decent person.
Yeah.
And so did Sav, the director, and certainly have long understood what the problems are that the queer community would have with Chasing Amy. It's like a white male, cishet white male fantasy of like converting a lesbian. That's like super problematic. Sure. I totally get it. But like something spoke to this Sav person, and clearly he and Kevin Smith are kindred spirits in being just like beacons of positivity.
Totally. I think this may be my favorite panel of all of Comic-Con this year. It was really amazing. Like you're saying, seeing Kevin Smith up there, I also don't remember the last time I actually watched him moderate something where I was like into it. But I thought he is so charming and just, and like you're saying, very humble and like gracious about the fact that they were making this documentary about his movie. But still funny and like poking fun at them, and they were poking fun at him. And I thought they just did such a great job of really selling this movie that I didn't know anything about, and without spoiling it. I feel like they managed to like talk, yeah, about the movie without really giving. I feel like they talked about how there were like twists or like a, you know, a journey that the director and his wife go through in the movie,
yeah,
but they like really didn't spoil anything. Like they showed a trailer, and I feel like I still don't know how that movie's going to end, even though like I know where they are right now in their life. I feel like, oh, this movie,
yeah, is they're clearly together, but like
what happens in the movie?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, it seems like my kind of documentary where it wasn't completely like, it might have been blueprinted going in, but they clearly just like followed with the story became,
yeah,
because apparently it becomes a lot about Sav and Riley, this couple. And yeah, I'm super stoked to see it. They did a brief, they talked so much that it was only a very brief Q&A, which is good, because like, yeah, the Q&A is all usually my least favorite part of most panels. But don't worry, we had a classic Comic-Con Q&A where a person didn't really have a question, just asked Kevin Smith to be on his podcast. And Kevin Smith said yes.
Yeah, he was so awesome. He was so nice about it. And, you know, those moments could really turn into something awkward or like mean. And he just knows how to handle that kind of situation.
Yeah.
But I think one of my favorite parts of the panel too was the like how so many of the stories about the director and his wife meeting, or like the basically talking about Tumblr and talking about like the Tumblr folks who like that's how they met. And you know, like like Kevin Smith was really confused about like, how do you even meet people on Tumblr? I had that same reaction. I was thinking like, wait, I've used Tumblr, but I don't really understand how you would meet a partner, on that, in that. And, but you know, they did such a great job of describing it and kind of talking about the community. And, it was really, really heartwarming. I feel like it was like, you know, I think it was the last thing that I saw that day, and it, or maybe no, actually there was more that I went to see, but it felt like it was a good start to Comic-Con, like this day of like, you know, the animation stuff, the A24 panel, and then this one. I feel like, oh yeah, this is going to be a great year.
Yeah. Yeah. So what did you do next? Cause this was my last panel of the day.
I went to the worst cartoons ever, the Jerry Beck panel. Usually it's on like a Friday night, around when the Sick and Twisted, Spike and Mike's Sick and Twisted, goes on. And so I'm not exactly entirely sure why it wasn't this year. Someone actually in the panel, towards the end during the Q&A asked Jerry Beck why he wasn't with showing with Spike and Mike. And it was it was kind of an awkward question, or it was kind of an awkward response, because I don't know if Jerry understood what was being asked. Like, because it seemed like the guy was like, you know, it's weird that you're with them every year except for this one, and now you're on a Thursday night. And he just kind of gave this weird non-answer, and he seemed like he didn't even know if Spike and Mike Sick and Twisted was even happening. Or like, and he was like, oh, maybe they're just not here this year, even though they were going to be there the next day. It was a weird Q&A, but you know, it was a fun panel. He presents it more like, or at least this time he presented it more almost like a PowerPoint presentation of like, here's you know, the series of things, and or you know, all these bad 60s, 50s and 60s animation with, you know, like poorly animated on a super low budget kind of stuff, but things that were like, you know, things that he's shown before. But I made it through the whole thing and it was fun. I had a good time.
Well, yeah, like I said, that was my last. Did you do anything else?
I don't think so.
This is going to sound like I'm totally complaining or humble bragging, or not humble bragging, like complaining. I went to, there was a Junji Ito art gallery reception that I went to go to, and I guess they over confirmed and I wasn't there early enough. So even despite the fact that I was invited and had RSVP'd, I got turned away along with a whole bunch of other people. So I didn't make it into the reception. But weirdly, because I was like, well, I'll go over to Seaport Village and have some dinner instead, I ended up running into a friend that I didn't even know was at Comic-Con, and we hung out the next night. So everything worked out. But then that night I went to A24, did a screening of Talk to Me. So I saw Talk to Me. It is a bummer that there are no more like movie theaters in the gas lamp that I had to like, I guess they had shuttles, but I just took a lift out to Mission Valley, to the AMC, in Mission Valley. And the screening was packed. They gave us free popcorn and soda, which was great. The movie was a ton of fun to see with a crowd. It's really good. It's really scary. And then they shuttled us to a party afterwards, which was in, they had like, it wasn't like at like a bar or restaurant. There was a whole, like they took over a building in like this weird industrial park in the middle of like nowhere, like no streetlights on it. It was like creepy. And they like, they pull up and like someone behind us like looked around and was like, oh, the experience continues. And this girl like sitting next to me, like, legitimately started like having a freak out. She was like, no, they can't do that. That movie was so scary. I can't do any more of it. Like, she was like legitimately freaking out. It wasn't. We'll get to it later. So yeah, you go in and they had like free food, free drinks with some like,
Sorry.
Yeah.
Wait, let me shut this off.
So they had some like themed cocktails with names. I'm trying to remember what there was, like the things that you probably won't get if you don't know the movie, but I drank a couple of tequila cocktails called 90 seconds, because 90 seconds is a big part of the movie. And then I didn't do this, but they had a little like room you could go in that was like two-way glass. So there were people the whole night just like watching people do this, but when you were inside you couldn't see it. You just sit at a chair, and they have, so the loose general premise of Talk to Me is that there's a hand, it's sort of like a severed hand that's been cast in plaster, and if you hold it and say talk to me, you like see a dead person, and it becomes like a party game among these Australian kids. And so you could go in, sit down, they'd like leave you alone, shut the door behind you, right? And you grab the hand and say, talk to me. And then the lights flicker and go dark. And then they come back up. There's like a guy dressed as like a dead person, like in your face. And they did it to so many people. And even like people watching it, knowing what was going to happen, they would still freak out. It was fun to watch all night, but I ran into a couple friends of the podcast, and Amy Nicholson was there, and Perry Nemiroff from Collider was there, because she does Comic-Con. She's like, we talked about, you were talked about earlier how all our like movie blogger friends and stuff used to always be at Comic-Con. Perry's still a lifer, still there every year. So I ran into Perry, and then I said, Perry did the thing, went in to do the thing, and being the well healed horror hound that she is, when the dead guy jumped out at her, she just laughed at him.
Oh, that's awesome. So,
that was fun. But that like the movie started at 10. By the time we got to the party, it was like well after midnight. I think I was there till almost 2. So it was a late night for me, which is why I on Friday got a little bit of a later start than I had intended to. So we can get into Friday. And yeah, I'll just start by saying I didn't go to the animation show of shows, which I had really looked forward to. I had really planned on going to the animation show of shows. I like the idea of just, you know, I saw a movie the night before. I like the idea of like getting to not just see panels about stuff, but actually see art at Comic-Con. But it was at 10:30 in the morning, and having been up drinking until 2 a.m., I did not make it. What did you do early on Friday?
Friday was a pretty slim day for me. I only ended up, we got there kind of late, and so I didn't end up doing anything until the 3 o'clock Popeye panel, and then went to the Leonard Maltin panel after that. But that was the entirety of my Friday. Yeah. I missed a bunch in the morning also. But I think overall, I was happy with the two panels that we made it to. Those were the two panels that I dragged Miranda to it was quite an experience, yeah, for them to like be in, see these two panels of like, for like the super nerd, or super movie, yeah, animation nerd, crowd.
Yeah, so I guess I technically did make it to two panels, but one was just a panel. I wanted to go to the Leonard Maltin panel, and so I went early and sat through a panel on like how to become a comic book retailer. So that was fun to hear stories of people who have started comic book shops all over the country, and they talked, because I'd seen something like this before, but a big change that happened over the past few years, if you're a comics person, is that, so the default comic book distributor for years and years and years has been Diamond.
Yeah.
This company called Diamond, and they still do a lot of stuff. But DC, a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, stopped doing business with Diamond and just became their own distributor. and there's become some other, so it's become more splintered. So there was an interesting like new development of being comic book retailers. It used to be that you could kind of, if you just wanted to sell comic books, you could kind of get by just having an account with Diamond and getting all your comic books through Diamond. And now you have to have, you know, at least three different accounts with different distributors. And then if you carry like more trades, that's another account. If you carry books, like, you know, non-comic books, that's another account. So that was a big, that was interesting to hear them talk about. But it's not why I was there. I was there to see Leonard Maltin be told that he was wrong. Because it's a panel they do every year. In which Leonard Maltin's daughter, Jessie, right?
That sounds right.
Yeah, moderates the panel. Leonard Maltin is just sitting at a table. And I said, this is the exception to me not liking Q&A portions at Comic-Con panels, because this one is all Q&A.
Right.
It's just people telling Leonard Maltin that he's wrong about certain things. And they couldn't have started it off better if they tried. And maybe they did try, because the first person up was a guy who had a whole pre-written thing about Leonard Maltin not liking Godzilla movies. And it was like really eloquent and funny. And he read this whole thing and then like ended with like, "Mr. Maltin, leave Godzilla alone." And Maltin replied, "I'll leave Godzilla alone if he'll do the same." And it was just like, it was so fun and funny and like such a great kickoff to a super fun panel.
Yeah. He had a good, one of the people who went up poked at him about Terminator 2 and Terminator 2 being, you know, the one, like he rated Terminator 2 lower than the first Terminator, and that, you know, he really thought that that it didn't, you know, have the same kind of like hunger that the first movie had, as like, I think is how he was describing it. But then like the person pointed out,
I don't disagree with him, by the way. I mean, I like T2 more than I used to, because I like spectacle more than I used to, but I've always kind of preferred the Terminator.
I'm totally with you. But then they pointed out that like he had rated Terminator 3 and 4 higher than Terminator 2. And that's when I was like, wait a second.
Which one is 4? Is that Genesis or Salvation? I can't even keep them all straight. Because I never saw after 3. I never saw any.
I think it's Salvation. I think it's okay. The one with Christian Bale, right?
Yeah. Oh, right. In the rant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they didn't go into this on the panel. I've always thought Rise of the Machines was kind of underrated. Like, I think it's one of those things where it's like, when it comes to franchises, I rarely get like super invested in the franchise. So if something is like a change of pace, you know, just like with Star Wars, with whether you hate Last Jedi or you hate Rise of Skywalker or both, like I kind of like both those movies because I'm not that invested in Star Wars. I just like, sure, like having a good time. And so I do think Rise of the Machines is a fun movie. Jonathan Mostow has some really great set pieces, especially the fire truck car chase, I think is badass. The part where the lady T2 makes her tits bigger is dumb. That's very dumb. I'm not going to deny. Also, wait, like having a bummer ending in a big summer blockbuster was fun. But anyway, there was like no T3 talk, but this was me wanting to talk about just right now, just wanting to talk about how I've always kind of liked Rise of the Machines.
Yeah. I feel like there were several moments this time around, and maybe this happens every year, because I don't remember, but he definitely felt like, oh yeah, I should go back and maybe revisit something. Because someone brought up like, The Thing as a thing, as a movie that he had, you know, like given like 2 stars to or something at the time. Yeah, but he's like, yeah, oh yeah, you know, like that's a movie that deserves maybe a reevaluation, I think, from him. And
yeah,
maybe we are about to say the same thing, but like there was a moment when someone came up and was like, oh, we read your, well, actually, maybe this is 2 separate things. So what I was going to say was like, he did talk about how he will go back and like in his revising or in his like every year when the new volume comes out, and yeah, it's like, oh, I need to like add a line to some of the ones where it's like, this one is highly regarded or something. He has some like, you know, a few quotes where he'll just add to a movie.
It has its like, defenders or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
What was... what was the movie that Jesse, if we're sticking with that as our name, the movie she liked as a kid? It was like a late 80s, early 90s movie that he like added half a star to, like, for her. It was a sweet story, but I can't remember what the movie was now.
I don't remember either. There was a
fun... she's like our age, so it's something from when we were kids.
Totally.
Yeah. But you had more to say?
Well, there was a fun one of the people came up, talked about how they were kind of raised by their parents, like, to, you know, if it had a good review, then they would watch it in there. And then he would, and then they like later found like, oh wait, some of these movies that he gave poor reviews to were actually like great movies. And I can't remember which one it was. Maybe it was like The Shining or something, but it was,
I think it was the one that he was like, yeah, it was The Shining that he like, that he didn't see until like young adulthood because, yeah. Leonard Maltin had given it a bad review. But I don't think Leonard Maltin's a horror guy, because he also liked the first Alien. He didn't like. What I was going to say, the left turn I didn't see the panel taking was, speaking of the Terminator, Leonard Maltin met Harlan Ellison at the press screening of the Terminator.
That was a good Harlan story.
Harlan Ellison had like gotten his way into the press screening because he'd heard that they ripped off one of his Outer Limits, right? Was it Outer Limits?
Right. Well, it was like Outer Limits and Star Trek things that he had written, where like they pulled from kind of both of those. Yeah.
And so he was like, they met before the screening. He was like, yeah, I'm here because Harlan Ellison's like, yeah, I'm here because they, I hear they ripped off my story, and like, apparently Harlan Ellison just like harumped through the entire movie. But the surprising thing that I didn't know is that Leonard Maltin then became like lifelong good friends with Harlan Ellison and even Jesse, if that is her name. I could just look it up.
That is her name.
I keep saying that. What's that?
That is her name.
Okay. Jesse told the story about how she remembers like Harlan Ellison as a girl, and how he like was always around and like got her. I'm saying the word like a lot, but got her to stop saying like a Valley Girl, because he hated it. But also Leonard Maltin told the story of when he had surgery, and the surgery recovery required that for like a week he had to basically like lie down flat on his stomach almost all the time. And Harlan Ellison would just like come over and read to him to like keep him company. It's so, I mean, obviously Harlan Ellison is a problematic figure, and Jesse Maltin like addressed that but like was clearly a good friend to the Maltin family.
Totally.
Yeah, that was surprising. That was cool. And then that was my last panel.
Yeah, same. We didn't do anything else after that. That's when we took off from.
You headed back?
Yep.
So I did, this is my night of party hopping. I have a tendency to like say yes to anything that gets me like free booze, you know? And this is the day my wife came in town. She, the first 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday, and most of Friday, I was alone. Friday evening, she joined me. So first I had I had RCP'd to, it started at 6 p.m. So it's not even really a party. It was like a happy hour, essentially, the Den of Geek was throwing at a brewery, which was further into the East Village part of San Diego than I'd ever been. So that was a cool walk to get over there. But it turned out there was also like a lot of crypto people there, and a lot of people were talking to me about crypto. They're all really nice, but they're all like really into crypto. But anyway, I got a free beer, and then a couple free beers. They had actually like Gala Games and this brewery, Mission Brewery, had like collaborated on a few specific San Diego Comic-Con brews. So I had like a pale ale and an IPA that were really good. So yeah, Mission Brewery seems like a cool place. Then I hopped in a Lyft and went to a party for Neopets because I got an invite. Ran into someone I know, Rama, from a fellow member of the Hollywood Critics Association. Ran into there, and Natalie joined me for that, and went up and got free drink. But it was like, this was also like, it was a party, but it was also like clearly for like, it's Neopets, it's for kids, and there were people there with their families. But the cool part of that is they had a ton of like like arcade or type games. Like we, Natalie and I played Skee Ball, which Natalie's always really good at. We played the little, like the basketball game, like they have at a Chuck E. Cheese or a Dave and Buster's or a thing like that. And had like, they had free tons of free food. They had different like free food stations all over the place. And like I said, a couple, well, the pass only got you one free drink a person. Natalie and I are very charming. We got two free drinks. We're very charming. We figured it out. But then we bounced early, which means, unfortunately, we apparently missed the pre-recorded video message from John Legend to the entire party about how he and his family love Neopets. And we went to a party way out on... is it called Shelter Island? You're the San Diegan, is that the
oh right one? Yeah, Shelter Island.
Yeah, I went to a party out there at a fancy Thai restaurant right on the water called Bali High, and that also had free food and drinks. Yeah, that was a super fun time. I'd never been out to Shelter Island. It was cool to see downtown from the other side of the bay, essentially. And meet some friends. There was a guy, not friends, make some friends. Cause again, especially Natalie, but we're very charming. But yeah, we made friends with a guy who, is a screenwriter who was obviously on strike, but has gotten into writing comic books as well. Independent comic books as well. So we, chatted with him and his friend, who I think he was there with the artist that he works with, a woman who is from San Diego. We talked about Donna Jean, which is a vegan restaurant from San Diego that just recently opened here in the San Fernando Valley and is really good. And when we were like, oh, you're from San Diego, have you been to Donna Jean? And she like lit up like, yes, Donna Jean's great. And it is really good. Yeah, so that we party hopped, and then we ended up meeting that. So that friend that I had before that I didn't even know was in town, we ended up meeting him and his friends for drinks. And once again, had a late raucous night, smoking a cigarette outside the Star Bar in the Gas Lamp. I met a dude who was staying at a hostel in the Gas Lamp who was like, yeah, I'm here for 2 weeks visiting my family. Like, I didn't know when I booked it. It's Comic-Con, but like, it's a ton of fun. And that's happened before, because I used to stay at hostels. Now I stay at a hotel, but out in Mission Valley, so it's cheaper. But I used to stay at a hostel. And occasionally, yeah, you would meet people there who were like not there for Comic-Con, just like, you know, passing through or whatever. And that seems so surreal to be in the midst of it and not have intended to be there. But yeah, so that was my Friday. I just talked a lot. How did you kick off your Saturday?
So Saturday was a big choice for me to figure out what did I want to do. So like Saturday morning, there were like three panels that I had to choose from. There was the Futurama panel in Ballroom 20, which was going to be for the new series that just launched on Hulu, or the Lotta Reiniger panel that I talked about in our preview episode, just about the director. But one that I didn't mention in the preview episode that I later realized was one that was the one that I was most excited about, was to see the new short film and panel about Disney animator Andreas Deja. He made a short film called Mushka, and it's a animated film about a woman in Russia and her tiger, and it was awesome. It was beautiful. And Deja has been, you know, he's worked on, you know, like iconic Disney movies like Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin and like a lot of the stuff in like the late 80s, early 90s. And so if you look him up, you'll see like, oh, he's done everything. But basically for the past, I feel like 10, 20 years, he's been working on this movie. And in that time, I've been following his blog, you know, and just seeing like he'll usually post pretty neat, like old sketches from movies that he's worked on or sketches that he's kind of unearthed from the Disney archives. And but then he's also posted, you know, updates to this short film that he's been working on. And it was just really, it was really awesome to see this finally come together as like a final finished product with like a beautiful score and just incredible animation. And then, you know, he brought up the composer of the music, and then as well as like some of the other folks who worked on the animation and producers of the film. And they were all just, it was just a really heartwarming, sweet panel. I feel like it was the, I feel like it was the right choice to go to for me to start Saturday morning.
I didn't mention that on Friday I didn't get into the Bold Voices of Contemporary Horror panel because there was some like Arkham game panel like two panels later that people were camping out for, and I just couldn't get in, unfortunately. So yeah, Saturday I kicked off again with a kind of accidental panel, but it ended up being really interesting. So a lot of panels that were supposed to have stars on them got canceled, but the TV Guide fan favorites panel pivoted to having TV Guide and other sort of like pop culture journalists talk about covering fandom. And so it was like they had questions like what's the most hate you've gotten for writing something, or like what's your favorite, like whatever. It was just like I couldn't tell you any of the people's names, unfortunately, but it was kind of a cool perspective and a cool way to pivot from not having the stars there is to have the people who cover the stars talk about them. Anyway, so that was in Ballroom 20, and I sat through it because I wanted to go to Spike and Mike's All Ages Festival of Animation, not the second Twisted, but also don't like get it twisted. All ages doesn't mean that it's like kids stuff. Like it's definitely not. It was like a lot of the stuff was pretty violent. And some of it definitely had some of the sophomoric humor, but I think calling this the All Ages Festival goes to show how seriously they take the Sick and Twisted Festival, that it is like really often really fucked up stuff. But so this wasn't, like I said, I didn't get to go to the Animation Show of Shows, which I would have preferred because they focus on new stuff. You know, this, the newest short they showed, I think was 2016. They started off with a couple of Craig McCracken's No Neck Joe shorts, which I've seen before, but then they showed a bunch of stuff I hadn't seen. A really cool one called Grandma's Hero, which is about like a sort of medieval knight going out to like vanquish things, but his grandma comes with him and like keeps besting like dragons and baddies by just giving them free cookies, and he gets like frustrated because he wants to kill stuff. And it was entirely wordless. Speaking of entirely wordless, there's another one, 1990, a French one called Cavalette, which I guess translates to grasshoppers, which kind of like tells the entire history of humanity through war. It's basically like, it's kind of like darkly comedic. It's just basically like the history of humanity is people fighting one another. There were a couple bad ones that I won't mention. I mean, there was one that was called Life Smartphone that was like, I think it's Chinese. And it's basically like, it's like, oh, people like walk around looking at their phones the whole time. And like, it was really trite, but also I mentioned the violence, like a lot of things that happen when people walk around looking at phones, they end up like getting killed or getting other people killed. And it was like, it made up for its triteness with being like inventively violent. And then, yeah, there are some more Captain Awesome, Key Lime Pie. And the one I really like, really liked, which I thought like, oh, they are doing a kids one. It's one from 2013, an Irish movie. Yoan Duffy is the director. It's called The Missing Scarf, and it's narrated by George Takei. And it's about a beaver who loses his scarf and goes walking through the forest asking all the different animals if they've seen his scarf. And so it starts out as being like very much for kids, and it never becomes like not kid friendly, but as his questions of these animals go on, they become more and more existential and like about the worthiness of life itself and the purpose of us being here and what we mean to one another and do to one. Like that was definitely my favorite of the hour of stuff they showed, was The Missing Scar from 2013. But I've talked too much about this one panel that you didn't go to. Also, yeah, Spike himself came out and introduced it, and pointed out that Spike and Mike have been at it for 45 years. Good for them. That was it for me.
I tried getting, so last in the preview episode, we talked about the My Neighbor Totoro panel where the one of the producers from Studio Ghibli, or he's not a producer, he's a production coordinator from Studio Ghibli for like their early years. And I can't remember now if he's worked, if he still works with them, but basically he's just a little bundle of trivia and art. You know, original art that from that era. And so it's last year's panel was amazing, and he brought all this like hand drawn stuff from Miyazaki, and so it was fun to see. And so this year I really wanted to go, but unfortunately Comic-Con put them in like the smallest room, room 9, which is just like, it was tiny. And I got there an hour and a half early to get in line, and I still didn't get in. And wow. The line wrapped, and I honestly thought I was going to because of how long the line got behind me, but they seriously underestimated the draw of this one guy. And Comic-Con, if you are listening to this podcast, please next year give them a bigger room, because that was ridiculous.
Did you do anything else before we met for dinner? I did one other thing too.
I went to the history of cartoon voices, another Jerry Beck, Leonard Maltin panel with Mark Evanier, and this voice actor, impressionist, animation historian, Keith Scott, he also from Australia, but he got up to talk about a book, like a book that he's been working on. And I can't remember now if it's like a 2-volume one, but he's been writing about like, basically like, you know, animation credits, in film, like voice actors. And like, it's almost like an encyclopedia of voice actors from older animation, you know, going all the way back into like the 20s. And he talked a lot just about the history of that, and would talk about how hard it is to research some things like this, and how people will, or, you know, at the, like in, they often wouldn't credit people, or they would credit people incorrectly, or they would credit people with like a name that they never really went by. Or like mm-hmm. it was wild to hear him talk about like how he had to research this. And he even went so far as to like look at like the old like time cards for actors to see like what were they in, or like they punch in for this movie, because like they didn't have any credits listed, so they had to like go see like, was this person even on set at this time? And it was so cool. And I don't think I've seen him in a panel before, but he is just an incredible impressionist. And he was able to just like on a whim, and he has this like thick Australian accent, but then just like on a dime, he'll just turn and like start speaking like, you know, Bugs Bunny or Porky Pig or whatever, or just like doing some, you know, he can like do a person doing a voice, you know, like that kind of thing. And, it was cool. It was fun to have like Leonard Maltin and Jerry Beck there, because they're all, and Mark Evanier, they're all just like, you know, animation nerds. And so they all just, it was fun to just, you know, hear them all geek out about this stuff.
All right. So when I left after the Spike and Mike, I walked the floor again just to do it again, but also kind of cut through. I did witness a funny thing. I was walking near one of the concession stands on the floor. And I heard in this order, snap, motherfucker. And I looked down, and the guy walking past me the other way had stepped on a stray mayonnaise packet, which popped and sprayed mayonnaise all over his leg. And that's like, it could have been me. I mean, it was so close to me. It happened right next to me. Poor guy. Anyway. So, yeah, then I cut through the back, because every year on Saturday during the afternoon, I take a little time, and I've done this for like 10 years, take a little time to watch the dudes in medieval armor who are fighting with swords outside. Yeah,
those guys are those people are awesome out there, and it's always fun.
It's awesome. Yeah. And this was a really humid year, and I can't remember if I've talked about this on the podcast before, because one year I overheard someone when I was watching, ask like, aren't you guys like boiling in these armor, like the armor? And the guy was like, no, they wear these like bodysuits that you like put ice water in. And he was like, this was like years ago, but it was another hot year. And I remember the guy being like, no, I'm actually kind of cold. So, it's good to know that they're not sweltering in the armor under there. But yeah, so I watched some of them. Then I went and revisited my favorite bar from last year. So last year at Comic-Con, I was being super COVID conscious, as we talked about 2 years ago, 2 weeks ago, I mean. And so I didn't want to drink at bars unless they had an outdoor element, which meant the main bar that I went to was the Deck at Moonshine Flats, which is like an outdoor bar. And I was like, I should go, you know, pay my respects to my old friend, the Deck at Moonshine Flats. So I sat there and waited for Natalie to come down and join me. And then she and I went to our last sort of party type event, or lounge, I guess officially is how it's credited, the Nat Geo Lounge, which is on the rooftop of what has now become the Margaritaville Hotel. Every year Nat Geo seems like they're pushing a different program on at this party. You know, last year it was Limitless with Chris Hemsworth. This year they're all in on Bear Grylls. I got a new Nat Geo bag and a Bear Grylls flat, or like water bottle flask type thing. Made some friends again because Natalie and I are so charming. And I love going to the Nat Geo party. It's not really a party because it's like early. It's like, well, the sun's still up. That's why they call it the Nat Geo Lounge. But it's always fun. There's good, hella free food and free drinks. And then we met you and went to dinner and went to drinks that night. And then I went home. We both went home, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that's usually like kind of like the unofficial end of Comic-Con for us. Then Sunday is usually like, I know you don't usually go to do anything on Sunday, but like
I don't go into the convention center. Natalie and I do go into the Gas Lamp for brunch every year. So we went to Barley Mash, which rules. I love Barley Mash. Because last year, I'm going to throw somebody under the bus, even though their food is good. The Blind Burrow, which has good Mexican food. But last year on Saturday, they had a sandwich board outside that was like brunch for Comic-Con, brunch Saturday and Sunday. So we were like, great, we're gonna go to brunch at the Blind Burrow on Sunday. And we get there and we're looking at the menu, we're like, where's the brunch? And they were like, oh my god, we don't normally do brunch. Yesterday was insane, so we decided to not do brunch today. So this year I made sure that Barley Mash was actually doing brunch, and we went down there, and for the first time I think ever in my going to Comic-Con history, it rained on Sunday.
That was kind of awesome.
Yeah, it was.
No, Sunday for me was mostly just wandering around the floor. I didn't end up going to any panels, and mostly just trying to see, you know, who. And I found some. I ended up going like all the way through the like artist alley area to But you know, even there where it's like, you know, small artists, it's like, it's so crowded everywhere on the floor. There's no relief. So you have to just kind of squeeze through as people are like stopping to look at something. You're kind of just like peeking over their shoulders to see what you can see. One of my favorite like Instagram comic artists has been there now for at least a couple of years. I'm not sure if they went before this, but Hannah Hillam, she does kind of like, kind of like simple line drawing, lots of, maybe cats and anxiety comics, and she's great. But it was fun to see her and get some stickers and things. Since they started going in like 94, I think, Giant Robot, the folks mm-hmm. who do like, they have the stores in LA, or they have us. They have two stores, maybe one or two.
At one time they had two.
At one point, yeah. But they, you know, they used to have a magazine. That's where things started. And so I had been getting Giant Robot magazines and shirts from them since 94, basically. And it was just cool. They weren't there last year, and I was really worried that maybe like something wasn't going to, like maybe they weren't going to come back to Comic-Con, but they were there this year. And so I like bought a bunch of stuff from them, but those guys are great. And I, you know, it's fun to kind of have like grown up alongside them and like, mm-hmm. or like, it's like, it, you know, there are people that I see at Comic-Con every year that I don't know and have never talked to, but like, we have, you know, there's like a connection there because like, it's like, oh, my old friend, this retailer who I see once a year, every year.
Yeah.
It's fun to see those people, even if I never talk to them.
Yeah. A quick Google search seems to imply there's just the one store now.
Yeah. Well, you should go support them if you're in that neck of LA.
Yeah. It's on Sawtelle, which is like our sort of, or other, because we have Little Tokyo downtown, but Sawtelle, that area of Sawtelle is kind of like the other Little Japan of Los Angeles. Anyway, that's it. I think I talked about everything that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I think so. I guess overall, I mean, again, I thought it was pretty good.
Oh, I had a blast.
I didn't get COVID. I guess you didn't get COVID either, and I didn't.
Yep, didn't get COVID.
I didn't hear anyone talk about it. And it seemed like there were people who were masking and being, you know, careful about it. And I thought a lot about it while I was there. I was thinking like, man, I am so close to so many people right now. It's just, it was so weird.
Yeah. But I guess I didn't get it, which is good. I had a ton of fun. I mean, I'm like, signs that I'm older now than when I was going to Comic-Con is that like I value sleep more, so like I will miss a panel if I knew like I'm like I need sleep, but I also drink less. I mean, that Thursday night with the Talk to Me party, I did like drink a lot, but generally I drink less, especially like, I mean, you and I are like, our Saturday nights, we end up at the same bar we always did, but we don't close it out like we used to, you know? And so like Sunday, I was like, I got a good night's sleep Saturday night and was feeling good on Sunday. Getting older, taking better care of myself, but still in love with Comic-Con. And I will be a lifer. I'll never not go to Comic-Con.
I know I do go every year, go through the emotions of like, oh, do I want to go back next year? Maybe I don't want to go next year. And then like, I talk myself back into it every year.
Yeah. all right. Well, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Threads and all, and Blue Sky now, thanks to David. And, you can just find me. Search for Ryan Gallagher. You can find all the stuff over at CriterionCast.com as well. Thanks again, David. It's always fun to see you at Comic-Con and to do these podcasts. It's a real treat. And really? So I'm
since 2010.
I know.
That's the year I met you.
Yep.
That's right. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll definitely talk next year about Comic-Con. So you can find me at BattleshipPretension.com, Davey Pretension on Twitter, Davey Pretension on Blue Sky. David Backs on Letterboxd, all that stuff. Follow Tyler. Thank you for listening. And you want to say it?
We'll get you next time.
Bye.